From coast to coast, through WOL, in the nation's capital, Mutual presents America's outstanding commentator on the national scene. Heard nightly over more stations than any other news voice of radio, Fulton Lewis, Jr. Mr. Lewis.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, we've had the first official showdown in Congress today on what probably will be the most important and vigorous fight of this entire session of Congress, the question of continuing Secretary of State Hull's reciprocal trade agreement program after it expires on June the 12th. For nearly 6 weeks, the powerful House Ways and Means Committee has been studying that proposal. Mr. Hull appeared in person, spent several days on the witness stand. This trade agreement program is, well, almost a religion with him. It represents his entire political philosophy. He and his supporters claim that most of the present troubles of the world are directly traceable to the jealousies, the hatreds that result from unfair practices in international trade. He comes of that old school of Southern political thought that believes that tariff laws are really the root of all evil. He says that our present tariffs are so high that foreign countries are prevented from selling their goods in the United States, and that they in turn have retaliated by placing high tariffs against American goods. That causes, he says, a stagnation of trade. So under this trade agreement program of his, Mr. Hull makes agreements with foreign countries by which they reduce their tariffs on goods that we would like to sell in their countries, and we in turn reduce our tariffs on goods that they would like to sell here in the United States. That, of course, seems very simple, and it's very satisfactory to the exporters in the United States who are able to sell more goods to foreign countries on account of these trade agreements. But at the same time, it is definitely unsatisfactory to those individuals here in the United States who find that they have increased competition in the markets here at home from the additional goods that come in from other countries. And there arises a most unfortunate quirk of human psychology. Two emotions, gratitude and resentment. The first one, gratitude, being politically the weakest of all emotions, if it is existent at all. Resentment being just about the strongest of them all politically. In other words, the exporter who sells more farm machinery to South America as a result of these trade agreements is very likely to take that increase for granted. He expects an improvement in business. He's very prone to tell himself that it's due to the fact that he's a particularly smart fellow and the improvement is due to his own success. But the individual who is pinched by the competition, the new competition from outside products coming into this country, is very careful to find out who is to blame or who he thinks is to blame, and he doesn't forget once he finds out. So the complaints against Mr. Hull's program have been far more articulate, far more vehement than the compliments have been in favor of it. The farm organizations have protested bitterly because they think outside farm products are coming into this country in competition with domestic farm products. Numerous groups of organized labor have done the same thing. The Republicans say the entire trade agreement program is illegal, basically, because these so-called agreements are really treaties, whatever tag may be applied to them by an act of Congress, and the Constitution requires that all treaties must be ratified by the Senate. Under this law, of course, these trade agreements are not ratified by the Senate. You might remember that point, by the way, because there's likely to be a very interesting development on that score within the next 3 or 4 days. A rather dramatic move in the Senate, I think, which I got wind of this afternoon, but unfortunately, I can't pass it along as yet. Anyway, there's the picture on both sides. The present law expires on June the 12th, and after that time, Mr. Hull would not be permitted to make any further agreements with any countries. And so, this legislation was introduced to continue the program for another 3 years. This afternoon, it came up in the Ways and Means Committee for the first test. That legislation had to pass the Ways and Means Committee, of course, before it could ever come to the House floor for consideration at all. And in that test this afternoon, Secretary of State Hull was 100% successful. There are 15 Democrats on the Ways and Means Committee, 10 Republicans. All morning and all afternoon, the committee took up amendments of one kind or another, and every time the voting was identically the same. The amendments were voted down, 15 Democrats to 10 Republicans. When the final vote came on the bill as a whole, the roll call was 14 Democrats in favor of it, 10 Republicans opposed, and one Democrat who just couldn't go along with the program, Representative Wesley Disney of Oklahoma, voting neither pro nor con, he merely voted present. So Mr. Hull has come out victorious on the first skirmish of the trade agreement battle. It did take a terrific amount of political pressure on some of those Democratic members of the committee to persuade them to vote in favor of this bill today. In fact, Secretary Hull himself called the Democratic members of the committee to the State Department several days ago and personally appealed to them to support the legislation. I know firsthand that several of them are privately opposed to Mr. Hull's theory. But once again, the votes are what count, not private opinions, and Mr. Hull got their votes today regardless of their private opinions. Whether he can do the same thing when the bill comes to the House floor remains to be seen. But there won't be too long to wait to find that out, because the House leaders agreed late this afternoon to bring the bill up for consideration in the House on February the 19th. That is 1 week from this coming Monday. Now, the mysterious, much-discussed head of the Silver Shirt Organization, Mr. William Dutch Tully, finally appeared before the Dyes Investigating Committee today. He submitted to questioning like other witnesses who have come before the committee, and the story he told was, well, shall we say, unusual in the point of view, at least unusual. The Silver Shirt Legion, you know, is an anti-Jewish organization, and it has been listed on frequent occasions as a subversive organization. That term, of course, is very broad, rather carelessly used. But today, Mr. Tully, with his white hair and his white goatee, told the Dyes Committee that he organized the Silver Shirts not for any subversive purpose, but for a patriotic purpose. He said the anti-Jewish angle is merely incidental. He said he thinks it has been carried too far. He said the original program, the original purpose, was to fight communism because he and his fellow organizers believed that the communists were about to attempt an overthrow of the United States government. This was about 7 years ago, back in 1933. The Silver Shirts are organized, he said, on a military plan. That is to say, they have officers of various ranks, and they're divided into groups like an army is divided into companies. But he insisted that the organization has never indulged in military training of any kind. They have no weapons, no ammunition, and they do not even indulge in military drills. He said the anti-Jewish policy arose because he believed that most communists are, to use his words, most communists are Jews. Let me remind you that I am merely reporting to you the testimony of Mr. Tully. For that reason, he said, the organization refused to permit any Jews to become members. Then came a bit of testimony that rather took the breath away from the gentlemen of the committee. Representative Noah Mason, a Republican from Illinois, said that if the primary purpose of the Silver Shirts was to expose and fight communism, didn't Mr. Tully feel that the Dyes Committee could be trusted to keep the country informed and safe? Why was it necessary for the Silver Shirts to continue their work? And Mr. Tully came back with a reply, I agree with that point of view completely. If the Dyes Committee continues to operate and continues to expose communism, there is no need for my Silver Shirt organization, and I feel that my organization should disband and cease to exist. Now, you may recall that last week I reported to you an incident involving Senator Arthur Vandenberg of Michigan and a resolution he introduced in the Senate calling on Secretary of State Hull for a complete report on whether Soviet Russia has lived up to the agreements she made back in 1933 at the time she was recognized by this country. I told you at that time that the resolution had been sent to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for consideration there, and the Democrats on that committee were trying to sidestep any action by the Senate as a whole, any action that might attract the spotlight of public opinion, by having the chairman of the committee, Senator Keith Pittman, quietly make an informal request to the Secretary of State for that information by an informal private letter. That's just what happened in the final analysis. And today, Mr. Hull's reply to the Foreign Relations Committee came back and was made public. As you may recall, Soviet Russia promised back in 1933 that she would not indulge in any way in any activities in the United States to change our social or political or economic system. She also promised to make a settlement of the debts which were left over by the old Kerensky government, and also to make a settlement for American property that was seized at the time of the Russian Revolution. And in his letter today, Mr. Hull admitted that Russia probably has violated those promises and others. But he made it very clear that, in his opinion, that does not require a break of international relations, because he said that the recognition of Russia was not entirely contingent on that agreement. He said the agreement did come along at the same time that we recognized Russia, but he said that that does not mean that one was based on the other. Senator Vandenberg took the floor of the Senate late this afternoon and said that he does not concede Mr. Hull's argument in any particular or detail. He said that under those circumstances, the circumstances as stated by Mr. Hull, there would be no reason for any exchange of letters, any agreement at all at the time of recognition. It was absolutely meaningless. And he said he still insists that the original act of recognizing Russia was wrong and that the president should end diplomatic relations now. Now, touching on politics for just a moment, I discovered this afternoon that since the Democrats selected Chicago for their national convention this summer, the Republican leaders are beginning to shy away from that city very decidedly. They're looking with rather flirtatious eyes at the brotherly love city of Philadelphia. That's a bit surprising because until Monday of this week, when the Democrats made their decision, it was generally conceded all around that the Republicans would choose Chicago regardless of what the Democrats might do. As a matter of fact, it was so generally understood that more than 2 weeks ago, nearly 3 weeks ago, one of the leading hotels in Chicago sent out letters of advertisement to all leading Republicans here and elsewhere, telling them to make their hotel reservations early for the Republican convention in Chicago this summer. But a week ago, a delegation from the businessmen of Chicago called on Mr. John Hamilton, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, and they told him that Chicago would like to have the convention, yes. But Chicago would not put up any money to help pay expenses, and the money, of course, is a most important consideration. When Mayor Kelly of Chicago won the Democratic convention last Monday by promising to put up $150,000, Mr. Hamilton immediately called the Chicago businessmen back into conference with him and asked for an explanation. They said that Mayor Kelly did that on his own responsibility, as a Democrat, not as mayor of the city. Apparently, he felt it was worth that amount, they said, to the Democratic Party in Illinois to have the party convention held in Chicago. And they said that the mayor, presumably, is planning to pass the hat among Democrats in Chicago in order to get the money. Obviously, they said the mayor would not do the same thing for the Republicans, certainly not pass the hat among the Democrats. And so the problem is, how will Chicago be able to offer any cash guarantee that will satisfy the Republican Party? In the meantime, Philadelphia is definitely disappointed about losing the Democratic convention, and the report is that that city is willing to go well over $150,000, perhaps as high as $250,000, so that may be the final solution. Instead of having the Democratic convention in Philadelphia and the Republican convention in Chicago, it looks as though we may have exactly the reverse. But that's the top of the news as it looks from here, ladies and gentlemen. Until tomorrow evening, good night.
Fulton Lewis, Jr. will return to the air tomorrow at the same time from the studios of WOL, Washington, D.C. Stephen McCormick speaking. ¶¶